Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, K2, Kaylin Kyle. Don't know if that's stuck.
You didn't listen to Wednesday's show, that out which of is turn. Not surprising.
No, yeah. I did.
I invented that as your nickname, opposed to Kaylin Carr, who's C2.
Yeah.
Because you guys both have the same letter in your first and last name.
I actually don't mind it.
Yeah.
Okay.
K2 is also, I researched, the second largest mountain in the world behind Mount Everest, so it's famous.
So you're calling me tall or fat.
Say any of that. I literally just said it's famous.
Larger than life. Yeah. Yes. That's what he's saying.
My personality is larger than life.
Exactly.
I am, by the way, I have to talk to Adrian Heath because the fact that you got a Minnesota jersey before I've even got my hands on a Minnesota jersey is shocking.
And it's customized. MLS.com. You just have to trust me.
You need to start doing yoga.
Yeah, it does say MLS.com.
Yeah. It's an affectionate nickname from the folks.
They put a dot after MLS before .com the word. It says
MLS soccer.
.com.
Right, yeah. This is the nomenclature,
dot.
Dave.
Eric, I think that's one dot too many.
Well, thank you to Eric Durkee and Gabby in her final act, I'm sure, sending
shout out
this
to Gabby.
Me. You can tell that there's just three of us. We have an availability issue here on the show.
Yeah, obviously.
Just me.
So no Matt Doyle here today. He came down with the Missoula mumps.
Yeah.
The Sixers sickness, the Tatum typhoid.
He's sitting with Derek White on the bench, so they're watching Marcus Smart put up threes.
It's a tough one for Doyle. Been a difficult weekend for him. So
for the brand. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've really enjoyed, by the way, being a consumer of Extra Time over the last week. A little bit scared that, you know, my job, my place in the starting 11 as host might be
you
in jeopardy.
Always need to be pushed. Everyone needs to be pushed.
Yeah, I feel...
You never want to get too comfortable.
I feel under pressure from David Goss.
How did you feel he did?
Wonderful. I was cackling. Somebody hit us up and said, stop with the chaotic banter off the top of shows.
You mean Wes Burdine.
No, well, there's actually another person later in the show, an Orlando fan that doesn't like it. But Wes doesn't like the NBA talk. So that we just did our NBA bit right there. That was it.
I like that Wes's assumption was that you were going to bring things back on the track. Yeah.
If anything, I'm the opposite. I'm we don't have to talk about soccer.
Where's Joel Embiid in this whole thing?
This is a podcast about people.
Yeah.
And we are those people. No, look, we have a big show today. Match day 11 in the books. And it was a big show before this morning. And then this morning rolled around. And if you were on Twitter or checking your email or, I don't know, just living...
My
not
phone
under
kept
a rock.
Going off. I was driving in from Jersey. Yeah. And it was like notification. Uh-huh. I thought it was you guys.
Uh-uh.
I was like, guys, I'm driving. Just let me drive in peace. Let me listen to my music. Have my New Jersey bagel on the way in.
Well, but you know, big news in New Jersey. Gerhard Struber out.
I don't think we're going to win that one.
As the head coach of the New York Red Bulls, but mutual apparently, and there may be some news coming later on TBD that will make it seem more mutual. But right now, it sort of feels like they were playing poorly, and he was pushed out. And then Ezra Hendrickson. After that, out as the head coach of the Chicago Fire. So we have our first two coaching changes in Major League Soccer as of May 8th. So what, about a little bit more than 2.5 months to get our first changes?
I do appreciate that they did it before we recorded.
That was
clutch. Really nice of them.
Mm-hmm. I encourage that sort of behavior from PR staffs.
News
and front
hits by 10 a.m. Eastern time on Monday or Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, we tape Wednesday, correct. Wednesday afternoon. So if you wanted to roll it out Wednesday morning.
Yeah, but not Wednesday afternoon.
Good with that. Yeah, about 3 p.m. Eastern is your, that's your cutoff time.
Yeah, that's your line.
To make extra time, if such
lock
things matter
in.
To you. We'll get to match day 11 in a second. I do want to tease an awesome interview coming out on Thursday. I'm going to chat with T2's Michael Vang today. He's got an incredible story. Won a championship last year in MLS Next Pro. He is the first Hmong man to play pro in the United States. If you don't know about the Hmong people, do some reading. H-M-O-N-G. Southeast Asia.
Do they have to do reading or can they just listen to the interview?
They could just listen to the interview. Yeah. But he's got an awesome story, an awesome family that did really cool things in St. Paul as far as building soccer culture there. And May is Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. So that is going to be a really fun, interesting interview all about Michael, his culture, and his place in the game.
But speaking of T2, you could be your own MLS Next Pro team. You could be K2.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I don't know if K2 is going to stick, guys. I don't think so. I'd rather just like call me Kyle.
Okay.
So I think that's fair. My thought was we would tag each episode with a K2 edition, C2 edition. So people know. But I think in person, it doesn't feel as cool.
We'll workshop this.
Yeah. I do appreciate Kyle here off the top being like, yeah, no, I like it. It's great.
You know why?
5 minutes in. No, don't do that anymore.
It's because for the 13 years I played professional, I think I played 13 years, everyone called me KK and I hated it so much. But I never said anything.
Didn't put your foot down early.
No. And then John Herdman came in as our coach and he was like, KK. And I was like, John, I got to be honest. I hate it. So he just started calling me Kyle and I loved it. So it just stuck. Yeah.
I would have thought another Y would have got on there as like a Britishism of like Kylie Kyle.
No, whenever I played in Mexico, that's what they used to call me, Kylie Kyle.
You had a lot going around.
I learned your lesson. I don't know what my mom was thinking when she named me.
Don't let it continue. Alliteration. Alliteration's a great thing. Wyatt Wiebe, that's my second.
He has to say that because his kid. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. W2, in other words.
See how
it doesn't work that well?
The worst nickname on the planet. Now you're in tax conversation.
To be fair, it should be K2 because I've named all my kids HH because I love Harrison Heath. So it's Hendrix Heath, Hayden Heath. So we were all squared in our family.
So you were complaining about your mom 30 seconds ago and you have re-entered into that same
Meanwhile, you saddled your children with the same fate. Yeah. All right. Let's get to the best thing we saw on match day 11. Kaylin Kyle, not K2, what was it for you?
I have to go Joseph Martinez because I know him personally off the pitch because my husband played with him in Atlanta and he epitomizes a true professional of what he does. But, excuse me, it's what he actually... I'm going to need some water here, I think. How about you start with your best moment of the day? You go first. I'm going to come back to Joseph. Go on.
Okay. I love, you know, there's a cough button too you can push if you want. I got you. No, this is a team performance. Should I talk about Joseph?
Yeah. No, you go.
Okay, no, I'm taking Joseph. Okay. I just got to get this tickle out of my throat.
A great weekend of soccer. Goals, coast to coast, surprising results, revenge, everything. Yeah. Now you got two coaches being let go as well. So like there was so much. And I came in and I started saying, I have a dumb thing to say. And Wiebe immediately was like, I already know what you're saying and I love it. So we're going with brotherly love against Philadelphia. Dylan Nealis concedes a penalty. Questionable call. I haven't seen IR yet.
Can I just ask you before you dive into the brotherly love and also the brothers against the world mentality? Why on stand up?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a penalty?
I think I'm fine with it being called a penalty on the field. And once it was, I would not have overturned it.
I agree. Two things can be true in my opinion. Yes. Dylan Nealis
soft
not
touch.
Grab. It's soft, but he shouldn't
it's
grab.
So
it
just, soft, it just though
looks,
he dives.
I know.
So
but it
soft.
Looks, it's like he's impersonating. Like if I was to foul you and grab you and commit a PK, this is what it would look like. But I didn't grab you hard enough. Two things can be true. That's true. Also, Julian Carranza embellishes. I mean, this is some acting.
Yeah.
It's like Neymar 3.0.
The toe tap, like the whole thing, he definitely is simulating. But continue, the Nealis bros.
So VAR recommends a review. And so there's like a waiting period. And Kai Wagner comes over to Dylan Nealis and does the classic soccer player thing of like convincing Dylan Nealis that he was wrong.
You did.
And getting him to admit it, which has no relevance. So why are you even having that conversation next to the PK spot? And Dylan Nealis' older brother, Sean, starting center back, walks over and just shoves Kai Wagner. And he's like, get out of his face. And it's like, you don't talk to a Nealis brother when Sean's in the vicinity. He was not having it. It was some Long Island energy. It was great brother energy. I'm doing MLS Next Flex broadcast next week. I already talked to Dylan Nealis' former youth coach. I'm like all in already. It was a great moment.
On the brothers Nealis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimmy as well played. So three of them.
There's three of them. Whoa. So from the very start of this play, Sean, of course, wearing the armband, but which is the most like, I cannot believe you're doing this. Come on, Joe Dickerson, what are you doing, man?
He's lived his whole life bullying people away from his brother. He's used to it.
This was the scene. When I saw it, I was like, this is not the first time this scene has played out.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, these guys have practice in this moment. You have the older brother stepping in, being like, nah, don't mess with my guy. Like, I'm the only one that can whoop him. Like, that's the only way this works. It was Weeby's perfect.
Older brother. Yeah.
I just have this on a highlight package in my house for my 4-year-old showing my 4-year-old. You gotta stick up for your two years.
I tell my sons all the time. I'm like, I talk to them like, they fight, and I'm like, that's okay. Just don't hurt each other. And if you do, make up. But if I tell the older one and the younger one, because the younger one has got some a certain kind of energy. He's got the Sean energy.
It's the second one.
I'm like, if somebody messes with your brother, what do? Mess him up.
Nice.
That's great parenting. You're going to get absolutely crucified from some mums out
at
there.
Least.
I agree now, with that. No, I agree with it.
Mess him up is cool. It's not. I'm not literally saying. I'm saying just stand up for your brother. Yeah.
At least if something happens, I'm saying mess you him get up. Called into school, people question you about it. There's no proof that you've ever said
correct.
This. Like seared into the internet.
Yeah.
Because it's not happening right now on a recorded show.
So, yeah. Well.
Deniability.
Anders, do me a solid.
Deniability.
Disappear that one. Okay. You good?
I'm good. Tickle I don't. Gone? I just had a Kevin Egan moment. He had one of these on set on the weekend on MLS 360, and I crucified him for him. I have to do Joseph Martinez. Going back to all my points that I made before, he's just an amazing human being, and he struggled at Inter Miami since coming over. He struggled since his injury and just how he left Atlanta United. He was the king of Atlanta, then coming down to the South Florida, and I think probably the only team in Major League Soccer where I feel Joseph could be Joseph and have, you know, the weight of the world on his back. And I said it on MLS 360 at the beginning, it was going to be Joseph Martinez coming off the bench, and we're going to dive into that, breaking records, but it was his celebration on his first goal. The traveling away fans were in the top right-hand corner, and instead of celebrating, he saluted them and then celebrated, because obviously he hadn't scored for Inter Miami yet. He had all this pressure on him, all of us crucifying on him on MLS 360. Coming off the bench, Phil Neville's now had to bench him to be like, look, you just haven't been good enough. Capanna with the brace. And then Joseph just doing what Joseph does best. You could just see what that meant to him. The look in his eyes, the celebration, and no disrespect to anyone. And then we had him on MLS 360, and I had asked him, or one of the guys had asked him, how did it feel breaking the record, but then going up against your old club? And he said, you know, I don't really have an answer for that, because Atlanta made me who I am in Major League Soccer, which I just thought was so classy. He's just a classy guy, and yeah, just delighted for him. And I know we're gonna dive more deeper into that game and Joseph, but couldn't be more happy that he did it in a game, especially against his old club. Because as a former player, there is nothing better than scoring against your old club, but breaking records as well. It's pretty cool.
Serious revenge on this match week, whether it's Lucho with the Olympico against DC and obviously Joseph. And it was so interesting to me that it's the first touch for him too. And he said, I was nervous, which you don't expect a guy like Joseph Martinez to say, but without a goal against his old club, all these sort of like factors swirling around him, and you want to have that moment to sort of settle in on the pitch maybe, and it's not there, and Campana doesn't know if he wants the PK, and Joseph's like, it's mine. That's just a very it's an iconic Joseph moment for an iconic player, and the fact that he then went out and scored another one and got to 100, the fastest in MLS history, it's a beautiful story all around.
And it was the connection after on the second goal. Campana was the first one over to celebrate with him, which I thought was so classy of both of them. So it's a big question mark for Phil Neville of, do you go with up front two, or do you, you know, have that power to bring one of those two off the bench? But yeah, amazing scenes in Miami and back-to-back wins in a really difficult stretch coming off six winless. So it's huge for Inter Miami right
Absolutely.
Now.
Speaking of revenge, I'm going Kevin Cabral.
Mm. Yeah.
Just, you didn't know it would happen, but you hoped it would happen. You know, just like a chaos merchant as he has been for the Galaxy, whether it was creating it or being enveloped in it because he couldn't finish at the end. They basically jettison him. They pay $6 million for the guy. He gets abused by the fans, and abused is a strong word. They aren't happy with his performance, which was fair, like given the expectations on him. He has a restart in Colorado. I think Robin Fraser handled it perfectly, eased him in, didn't put any pressure on him despite the DP tag, despite the million in GAM that they spent for him. They got him up to speed. They whooped the Galaxy. He scores a goal. And I got to be honest, I did not expect from Kevin Cabral, who seems like sort of a soft-spoken guy, to go with, first of all, it's a tap-in. So if he'd like hit a banger from 30, this might have been more appropriate.
But to
turn around and point at his name.
It was also a tap-in that he has missed for the LA Galaxy.
The point at his name and blow kisses?
Yeah.
I love it.
It was poetic. It was fitting. It was absolute pain, I assume, for the Galaxy, who, you know, Angel City Brigade is back, but they're putting up the Andor TIFO and being like, yo, this isn't good enough. Chicharito is just panning everybody after the game. And you have Kevin Cabral coming into the building to score a goal as you get your butt kicked by the Colorado Rapids.
Rapids Nation, baby.
It was.
Shout out to the Pids.
It's your team.
It is my team.
It's your team.
I was delighted. You better believe I was.
You go back far.
He's got seven jerseys under the Minnesota one.
Yeah, it's like
LA Galaxy.
It's like one of those nesting dolls.
Except when they lose to the Rapids.
Exactly. By the way, I just
he lives in the bush. And just comes in and out.
Homer Simpson style. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's the beauty of MLS. Like, I was thinking as I watched this weekend, I was like, every take anybody could ever have has a 5-game, 1-month half-life.
Yeah.
So if you say something stupid, just know that in a month,
you come back around.
It's over. Yeah. It's probably going to come true after that month.
I picked Red Bulls to be second in the East. It's still going to happen.
I picked Montreal to be third, I think. And everyone, and then I was like, oh, what you think? I think Inter Miami, 55 points. They're back, baby. Never in doubt.
Never take the L.
That's why Kaylin Kyle picked Benjamin Kramaski as her MVP coming into the year. That what she knew.
I
want to have one serious moment before we get into the coaching changes that happened on this Monday morning. We did lose one of our own, Terry Vaughn, a longtime MLS referee, a longtime pro referee, FIFA referee. He reffed in CCL and World Cup qualifiers and the Gold Cup. Did it for more than a decade in this league. He passed away. It's a big loss for the refereeing community, for our North American soccer community. Just want to shout out Terry. Everything he gave the game, you know, grand scale, macro, but also micro in Iowa, in training future referees, in devoting so much of his life to a part of the game that I don't think gets enough credit. So we're thinking about Terry's friends and family. We're thinking about all the referees out there that are going to miss him. I know there are a lot of heartfelt tributes to Terry that went out. And yeah,
very sad.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you. All right, let's get to it. Struber out. Red Bulls lose again. Lose 1-0 to the Union. It could have been a soccer game. Mm-hmm. Maybe Jim Curtin said it was basically just a fight. Yeah, and here are the stats from Mark Fishkin, who follows this team and cares about this team about as closely as you can. Winless in 7 overall, winless in 10 against Philly, 7 goals in 11 matches, 1 win in 5 matches at home, another week in last place. Mark said it's time for a change. That change came on Monday morning. I'll read the quote from Struber here. Quote, I enjoyed my time at the New York Red Bulls. It was also clear to me that I wanted to return to Europe at the end of this season at the latest. It was extremely difficult for me to live here completely without my family. I informed the club early enough about my wishes, and we came to the agreement to part ways. I wish the organization and the players the best of luck moving forward. I've enjoyed getting to know the players, staff, and know my relationships I've built will continue. It was an honor to lead this club. I know they are all going to continue to accomplish great things in their career. Gerhard Struber, all comps, 33 wins, 31 losses, 23 ties. Very, very close to just straight up 500. Troy Lessain is now the interim manager of the New York Red Bulls. He, in the past, has been the manager and GM at New Mexico United and joined the club before this season as Struber's assistant.
I think before last season.
Before last season?
Yeah.
I got the dates wrong on that one.
Sorry.
Before 2022. Yeah. It feels like 2022 still sometimes. Right. So what do you think, Dave? What do you make of all this?
I think a lot of Red Bulls fans will have different reactions. For me right now, just sitting here listening to you read this quote, this is the coach of a team in the New York City area who started out his quote about leaving by saying, I already knew I wanted to leave.
Weird.
And that is, I think, to me, one of the cores of why this didn't work was you brought a coach in where he could have said whatever he wanted when he walked through the door. Everyone knew he had half a foot out. And the larger club did too, right? This is a guy in Gerhard Struber who is Red Bull global in his DNA. Left the Red Bull family to go coach successfully, some would say, in England. And it felt like for Red Bull, they always wanted to get him back in the system. They only have so many jobs. And so they were able to convince him to come to New York to be back in the Red Bull family, to one day continue to grow and be Salzburg, Leipzig, whatever else they're going to build, that he could be a part of that. And from the moment he arrived, that felt like the plan. How do you build something when the main central force is there to not be there that long? And I think that is a bigger picture story about Red Bulls as a club, and New York Red Bulls especially. And I don't think everything that's gone wrong is on Struber's shoulders. I don't even know if he's the one at fault for that. He's not the one who offered himself the job.
Paid a transfer fee to get himself there as well.
But it has but it has felt this way since the beginning. And I think I told you guys a couple times, like, I would be surprised if he finished this year coming into it, not because I thought he would get fired or whatever term they're going to use.
They would just move him up the ladder.
But it felt like when summer hit, he was going to go coach in Europe. And like, that's what he wanted to do. And so I think that's the biggest takeaway at first. And then I think for fans, you'll have relief because it's been bad to watch and it's been unsuccessful and it's felt tense. And I think that's never a positive way for a club to operate. And there's other conversations to have, but I think you have to start there by saying you manage a club in one of the biggest markets in the world and you're hiring people as a stepping stone to another spot. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, look, there were complicating factors this year, and that's a kind way of putting it. You know, Gerhard caught a lot of flack, including on this show, for the way he handled the Dante Van Zier incident as well. And, you know, we weren't there. We won't be inside those doors. I can't tell you what the whole and full truth of that is, but I do know that I wish it would have been handled a lot differently. The team, defensively, very good.
Yeah.
Among the best in the league. The underlying numbers absolutely love what they're doing in terms of, like, XG goal differential and G+. Could not finish. You know, part of that is, you know, I don't know if I'm fully on board on the depth conversation, Dave, but I completely agree with you in the sense that if any MLS team that's missing their best players is going to struggle. And if you're missing Lewis Morgan, Luquinhas, you know, has the transfer fee, has the pedigree, doesn't necessarily have the production. And then Van Zier, who set your record as far as transfers go, you're going to struggle to score. And they have struggled to score. But they have, it's like one way traffic in terms of how they want to score.
Yeah.
And teams have sort of figured that out. It seemed like teams figured out what he was trying to do in general.
Because it's the only thing he could do, though, because of those players that they are missing. They need to go out and they need to get someone that is going to finish chances. Because you look at the Red Bulls, I mean, they play the same way. And it's not, you just alluded to it, it's not that they weren't creating chances. One of the best defensive teams, second best after Nashville in the East defensively. I think they have, what is it, 9 or 8 goals against, which is outstanding. But couldn't finish chances. And I think for a manager, you touched on it as well. Just when you have, I've played for managers where you know that they don't want to fully be there. You can feel that energy. You can read that energy. And maybe the meetings aren't as in depth or the training sessions aren't as in depth as well. And as a player, then you're thinking, okay, if you don't want to be here full time, why are we showing up day in and day out? Now, I'm not taking this away from the manager because he's a fantastic manager. But I think there was a lot of elements that went into this as well, to the mutually parted ways. I think the Van Zier was a massive one. I think the pressure that he was on, not only from the fans, the organization, but people around the world of how maybe he handled or didn't handle that situation. Now, again, we don't know what went on behind the scenes or what was said for verbatim on that one, but that probably led into also, okay, I'm away from my family, then I'm getting heavily criticized. I'm not getting the best out of my players. I don't have any attacking threats to be offensively good. You can only be so defensively good in Major League Soccer, but if you're not scoring goals, it's very Minnesota right now. I mean, Minnesota, same thing, defensively good, but not scoring goals. And I think that's the key with Red Bull. Like, they're going to need to bring in now at this point. I know that you're talking about this manager, but what do you do after this if they continue to struggle? For me, you have to look, you have a Bradley Wright Phillips, and I'm not just saying this because he is in Major League Soccer, but that has played Red Bulls, that knows Red Bulls. Do you then maybe get in a former player to get more coaches into the Red Bull organization and develop them and create, so you're not pulling someone that's a foot in and a foot out and bringing him in from overseas and knowing that he wants to go back to Europe? So I think that's the biggest question mark is, okay, you have an interim head coach that, you know, has been there. He knows the Red Bull philosophy. But then at what point that you look at all these maybe successful players and you develop them like you did with a Jesse Marsh that's been successful, and then he goes to Europe and he creates more success over there. So I think there's loads of underlying stuff within the Red Bulls right now. But for the players, I will say it'll be a fresh start, where you're like, okay, we've struggled early on in the season. There's been so many off-field things that have happened, well, on-field that led to off-field, you know, criticism, which, again, it's to Van Zier, but it also fleets out to all of the team as well, dealing with that mentally and emotionally.
And as I'm sure you experienced, but as we always see, when this is about to happen, everyone can feel it.
Yeah,
and so everyone tightens and life gets harder for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so when the coach gets separate, you know, the coach leaves, gets let go, whatever, there is relief for everyone because everyone's living that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like with the, we feel it coming, right? The axe is hanging, but then once it falls and you look at this week, you've got DC United at home in Open Cup, and then you've got NYCFC coming into your building. Like, what's a better week to just go out and play and just play like idiots, right? But, you know, like genuinely play open and comfortable and attack. And if you get two wins, like you change the whole season.
Some of the pressure on those games is now off.
Yeah, and it's a different way. Yeah, it's been shifted.
It's not existential anymore.
Let's
Troy Lesane here, because I think to what we're all talking about and what you're talking about, Kalen, as far as players and people and developing, like, that's why you brought in Troy Lesane, who was at Mexico United and started that club and had two hats as a manager as well as a GM. Like, okay, why would Troy Lesane leave that situation?
Yep. No.
What would he leave it? He would go to a place like Red Bull where there's a conveyor belt upwards if they believe in you as a person and the attributes that you have as a coach.
And in part of the conversation around this, which I think Red Bull fans will be having this week, is that Red Bulls values people that they think highly of, like a Jesse Marsh. Bradley Carnell was one of those people.
Yeah.
So there's an element right now for fans of, well, yeah, that would have been our guy. So like that is going back, but still, I think the frustration of they did this for Struber. Right? Struber came in and coached just the playoff game after Carnell had taken over as interim and kept the playoff streak alive. And obviously John Wolanek before that, who won a title in USL and was around for a while, he's now in San Jose. So you've got two guys in MLS who could maybe be good coaches for you and could have been a part of this conveyor belt and know like the identity and the DNA and all that
stuff.
And
even before that, the frustration of, like, you know, Chris Armas had a better record with the Red Bulls, had more success with the Red Bulls
than what Struber has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of got forced out and felt, you know, felt some kind of way about it, as he talked about on our show.
So is there a bigger issue there then?
I think so. And I think in the conversation of like, who's going to score goals? I do think I've said this many times on this show, goals cost money. And if you're going to try and moneyball things, you see often those teams struggle to score goals. I know they've put money in Van Zier and they've put money in other players, but goals cost money. Like, that's the spot in every MLS team where it's, oh, they spent X millions of dollars. It's on Cucho. It's on Raul Ruiz Diaz. It's on Carlos Vela. It's on Dennis Bouanga. Red Bulls have never had one of those players. And they've done arguably as well as they could against that.
Yeah.
So that's one conversation. But let's talk about Troy Lesane, because I think Red Bull fans should be excited. This is a younger American coach who anyone who talks soccer with him is passionate about the way he sees the game. And I think it's a bit more possession heavy than what average Red Bull is, which I think was part of his intrigue in coming in, was like learning the other half, the pressing and that identity, and now trying to marry it. But this is a guy with big soccer ideas who believes in himself, who I think believes that you can create a very winning style in Red Bull. And I remember talking to him last year after they played a friendly against Barcelona. And he was like, man, it works. Like, we press Barcelona. I know it's a friendly. I know it's a summer. But, like, to watch, like, Ter Stegen put the ball out of bounds. Like, this is a guy who, like, loves those little moments. And so, like you said, like, he was brought in to, I think, replace the fact that Carnell was next and Wally was next and they had let them go or they had moved out. And there was no clear next person in the pipeline. And that's why Troy Lesane was brought in and convinced Struber is going somewhere else. We need a next head coach. We believe in you. Come in, learn the system, learn the club, be ready. This is a little bit earlier than they expected, but probably not that much.
Probably not that much.
If Struber said he was going back to Europe at some point in this summer, then we're a month, 2 months ahead.
I think in my mind, they would have just liked the transition. And I won't be shocked if Struber pops up at Salzburg, that they would have liked the transition to be just smoother.
Yeah.
That, like, the circumstances that they got themselves into, whether it be on a results perspective or an off-the-field perspective or a relationship with the fans, like, those weren't things that they planned on. In my mind, like, Red Bull's global, and I'm just, you know, I'm speculating straight up. It was just like, we're going to have a nice, clean transition in the summer. We're going to be in a playoff spot. Things are going to be rolling along. Van Zier will be getting settled. You know, Lewis Morgan, Luquinhas, et cetera, defensively be good. The structure will be there. Lesane can come into a team that, you know, where he can sort of put his fingerprints on it, but it won't be, you know, it won't be sort of this not dire. I guess it is dire. Their last place.
Yeah. Like, would you not have done it at the beginning of season, though?
Well, that,
and given him a full preseason?
Well, that's where you get into the frustration, I think, of like,
like, so as a player, I'm frustrated. If I know my head coach is gone potentially
but
in
then
the
you have
summer,
to ask yourself, so what's more important to Red Bulls? Is that, it this team, this squad, this season, or was it Struber and his development? And it sure feels like,
which,
it's
as a player, that's frustrating. Because I'm like, that's not an organization that I'm, you know what I mean, that I feel like I'm going to develop.
But the players have to be, but the players can't do that because most of them are on the same track.
Yeah.
Right?
And I guess you see a lot of players.
Caden Clark played well. got sold, got loaned back because that was what was best for his career at the time, right? John Tolkien's on the verge
of Reyes.
Christian Casares is here. Andres Reyes for a reason. Omer Fernandez has come through the two team into the one. Like, they're all kind of part of that. So you can't be too upset about it. But I think one of the worrying parts is what Chris Armas struggled with, which is elevating from being Buddy as the assistant to being the big voice now. And Chris Armas struggled with
it. Let's say it at least as he's done it.
He has done it, but now he has to do it with this group in which he has to make that shift. It's not being hired by another team where they don't have that background with you. You've been the guy that they've come to and complained to for a year and a half, and now you have to come in and be the sterner voice.
The one thing, if you read about Lassane and sort of his history and his ideology, that jumps off to me and makes it make sense why Red Bulls identified him as a guy they wanted to bring into the organization and sort of put this, hey, you might be next tag on. Like Jesse, like Struber, I think, you know, whenever we talk to Struber, it's like this, you know, we joked about young wolves, but it's about personal development. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the things that he is about within players, within people around him, is personal development. That is Jesse Marsh to a T as well. And that is definitely Lassane, at least in his public sort of proclamations and what he was building at New Mexico as well. Culture, improvement. Like,
I mean, he went from not there, like that team didn't exist in New Mexico, to one of the spots that players that were going to play in USL wanted to be. They wanted to live there. They wanted to be at that stadium. They wanted to play for him. They pushed to win immediately. Like, all that stuff happened under him, which I think is completely fair. And the other thing I would say is, I think Jesse Marsh is a unique story in American soccer because of his personality, but also his connection to Bob Bradley. I think the assumption would be that if Troy Lassane's successful, he'll be there.
And what if he's not? Like, what if he can't? And I'm not.
Well, then back to square one anyway.
Do you extend his contract? Do you give him that head coaching job? Or do you bring someone fresh in, like you said, that hasn't been there in a year and a half listening to all the problems?
I think that the Red Bulls value the relationships that they have more than that they would value like looking outside and saying, we're going to take a chance on you.
I'm not saying looking outside. I'm saying like maybe even someone like I know BWP, but I don't know, even former players that do have their coaching licenses or that are like that have been in the system.
You're talking about Thierry Henry.
I didn't want to say it.
There's not an obvious one.
Thierry Henry want that job?
He said that he wouldn't mind coaching back in Major League Soccer or getting into coaching again. And he's lived in,
I mean, he's got Fish Guy, right? Like, he's got the whole setup already. He doesn't have to find a new fish guy.
He's probably still got his apartment.
His aquarium's just, Tyranny.
He knows that commute, whether it be, I don't think he's taking the path or anything like that. But
probably not. No,
I think they'll stick with Lassane. I'm just going to put it on the table right now. I think even if the rest of the season goes poorly, it's already poor now. I think if they show any progress, if he shows like an ability to build, so I think they'll stick with him.
Can I blow some minds here for a second?
Yes.
And just go deep. Let's say season ends. It is poor. They are looking for something else. What if you went to a current MLS coach who successfully plays a pressing style and said, we've got a plan to get you to a European job?
Who?
Bradley Carnot. I don't know.
Oh, I was talking, Jim Curtin.
Oh, really?
Ooh, because he is contract.
I'm making this up. I am making this up just because we're here on a Monday and we get to do whatever we want. But
he hasn't re-signed a contract yet.
He hasn't re-signed. No. He already plays a pressing style. He has said, I think, pretty openly, like he'd love to push his career to other levels.
Ooh. Yeah.
Huh?
I like the show.
That it's going to be Troy Lassane, though, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be Troy Lassane. I thought you were like making a, like, I thought you were trying to troll St. Louis City fans watch Red
he's
Bulls come back
there.
And swipe Bradley Carnot off from under you. Yeah, I agree, which is why I was like, whoa, interesting.
I'm just going to finish your water here.
Yeah, go for it. I thought about it.
I don't have COVID, but I was like.
People have video. I don't think I can drink the cup after you drink it.
Let me ask you this one. Do you think the Red Bulls will pull out of this tailspin?
Yes. I would not be surprised if they make the playoffs this year. Again,
nine teams do, surely.
And they are defensively one of the best teams in Major League Soccer, which is the floor. Which means if you're that good every week, other teams will not be. They will lose here and there. Your performances will be more sustained. And you will, I think, be a top, as you said, 9 team in the Eastern Conference. You're going to get Luquinhas back. You're going to get Lewis Morgan back at some point.
Obviously, Van Zier's coming back.
And you have, I think there is an element of quality in this team that hasn't been touched because we didn't even really talk about it. But Gerhard Struber, I think, is so pure in the pressing is life is way system.
Too much almost. And maybe that's Lassane too, who maybe that was like almost like Armas came in and said, I kind of want to mute this a little
bit. I think
this
is different. I think there's a different situation.
You think he'll come in and just sort of tweak it a little bit more to have a little bit less like, all we do is press.
He also has experience, I think, of being a head coach at New Mexico
and
United.
Implementing those
so
ideas.
I think he understands how to get his ideas across there. Yeah. And I think the problem for Chris was as much as they had had issues, they had set a points record or they had won a supporter shield.
He was walking into a very high standard.
His shift was like, we need to change because we need to win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Where a lot of players in that team were like, for sure, but like we're also really good. Where now it's like, please, anything. Yeah. Right? And can you get John Tolkien on the ball more? Can you make a more defined role, I think, for Casares or Yearwood or Edelman in that hole to sort of play through sometimes? Can you make life easier for Omer Fernandez? Do you get away from just playing like two giant center forwards and put someone out there who can play a little bit more and link up?
Don't you dare challenge Tom Barlow's minutes.
It's fine. Elias Manuel could be the one. I don't care.
Or Corey Brook. Yeah, they've got a nice collection of those guys. All right, we'll see what happens for the Red Bulls. Big change for them. See what happens for Gerhard Struber as well. But questions organizationally. I do think the same questions exist for the Chicago Fire, who have parted ways with Ezra Hendrickson this morning. Kevin Thomas hit us up before any of this happened and said, when will the suffering end? Haven't we been through enough? This after a 3-0 loss to Nashville in which Chicago created... I'm going to say basically nothing, but I think it's fair to just say nothing. 13, 19, and 14 under Ezra. Frank Klopas, according to, it was reported, but now I think it's official. It's going to be the head coach for the remainder of 2023. CJ Brown and Zach Thornton are going to remain on the staff. Two legends there for the Fire. So now three with Frank back. We run that one back. I think I wish I would have gotten to take that shot of Malort with Ezra. I will say that. And there were moments early this year, certainly never in 90 minutes, that it felt like maybe they were going to get there. That it felt like maybe what they were building was going to catch that little bit of traction that they needed to be like a legitimate playoff team.
I'm bummed about this. I am bummed about this firing because I do like what I saw from Chicago this season. And I know we always joke about the quote, the mashed potatoes or the hard boiled egg in the hot boiled
water. Well, technically
it was
a potato, but now that
mashed baby. I do like what he was building because it was like 60 and he came into a difficult situation. I feel like in Chicago with the players that he had to work with what he had to work with. And you bring in one of your DPs with Shaqiri. Did he fit the style of play? He had the balls to say, you know what? I'm going to bench you. I'm going to bring you off the bench because Gutierrez has been playing phenomenal.
But he couldn't do that long term. Like, you know, Shaqiri's back in the lineup for this one.
And I understand that. But that also, for me, is you've seen other managers do it. You saw Phil Neville do it at Inter Miami with Gonzalo Higuain. He wasn't showing up, so he benched a world-class player that's won everything. Shaqiri hasn't stepped up for Chicago, and I love Shaqiri. I think he's a fantastic player. So that decision's probably not coming from Ezra. That's coming from somewhere above. I'm just making assumptions. I don't actually know, but I did like how he's turned Chicago around, the playing style, Chris Mueller, Kai Kamara coming in, and just kind of floating in, getting the best out of young players as well. Like with Brian Gutierrez, I think, you know, finding his form in the midfield, a player that then you can't bring off. I'm bummed about it. I genuinely am because Chicago is a team that was really exciting me, even though they're sitting bottom of the table. It's because the last 30 minutes, they just weren't able to close out Gabe. I need to go back and do how many points that they'd potentially given up due to that last 30 minutes. Probably all the games, if I'm being honest.
A couple weeks ago, it was four.
And they feel like more than
that. They gave up another two against Red Bulls 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That would be six at least.
The thing for me with Ezra and the Fire is that from moment one, like the constant was change, and that has been the constant. You know, whether it's playing styles and formations that he was going into, starters, guys that he was relying upon, you know, Gaga Slonina's in for a bit, John Duran develops, but as soon as they're in a position to maybe affect the team long term, they're sold, here comes the transfer fees, but he can't do anything with a transfer fee.
Yeah.
The injuries to start the season, whether it's Jairo Torres or the Navarros or, you know, whoever else, strikers, Shabilko wasn't good enough. Like, I think Ezra was put in it was a very difficult situation for a lot of reasons. Do I think he did the best with the situation? I don't. I think there are things that he'll look back on and say, yeah, okay, I could have done these things better. But the odds were stacked against him, in my opinion. You came into an organization that, you know, the tweet that we read sort of says it all. When will the suffering end? I mean, we're talking about not just a couple years here. We're talking about more than a decade of constant change, of constant issues, whether it be ownership or head coaches or players or whatever else. There's one blip in that with Basti and Dax and, you know, Nikolic and the season that they had. But other than that, it's been sort of a rudderless ship.
Yep.
And it's still a rudderless ship.
I was going to say, it has that.
Heitze makes this decision and lets Ezra go. But like, what did Ezra, like, what was he given to work with that said you were going to change this long-standing like path that we're on that just is mediocrity? Yeah. It was a very difficult job in the first place.
Well, and so one, the transfer fees don't help Ezra because you didn't sell DPs. You sold young players, but you'd already brought in the DPs, so you couldn't use the money to help your roster. I have the list in front of me of the DPs all time in Chicago history. Cuauhtemoc Blanco was signed in 2007. Pretty sure he's the only one who's ever hit.
Well, let me guess. So we got some misses here. Let's just throw them. Nery Castillo.
Yeah.
Is a definite miss.
Yeah. Well, they're all misses.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is just, can you name all of them? Nikolic worked for short term. You always knew that was going to be the case because that had been his career everywhere he'd gone. Schweinsteiger was at the end of his career. Since Schweinsteiger, they signed Katai, Robert Berich, Ignacio Aliceta, Gaston Jimenez, Shaqiri, and Jairo Torres. So, like, you can't get rid of all the players. So it hasn't been good enough. You're not getting results. As you've said, you can't close out games. They can't cut every player, so they fired the coach. And that's like
again,
the decision. Yeah. And it's not going to fix those problems, which are structural. And part of it is you start an 18-year-old goalkeeper because you sold the last one, and Chris Brady's off the charts. Like, he looks like he's 27, and for large segments of game, he plays like it. But that's going to be a weakness. But you're thinking long-term with that one, mm-hmm. slightly. That's like the only long-term thinking we've ever seen. They have either someone young or too old at center back. They have injuries, but injuries, if you are an injury-prone player and you get hurt, then something has to be asked of who's deciding on you. Gaston Jimenez, I just said, failure of a DP, so they bring him back on a non-DP contract. That wasn't really the issue. The issue was he doesn't cover ground and doesn't win tackles in a league in which, like, that's the most important position for teams that are going to be successful. They haven't spent well at the center forward position. Robert Berich, I just talked about money. That's not a Cucho signing. That's not a Raul Ruiz Diaz signing. That's not a name whatever big-time center forward. That's not even a Leo Campagna signing. Like, that's not big money at that position. So you got what you paid for. And it's been up and down and off and on with Chicago for years. And it's not going to change because the coach changed. Especially when you go back to a coach, by the way, who has coached this team now off and on for like 8 years.
Yeah, I just...
Well, like, you could get the sweatshirt video.
For Ezra to come into that and for all the experience that he has as an assistant and these incredible teams and clubs and moments in league history that he's been a part of, both as an assistant and a player. I mean, this is like MLS day one dude. Like, knows the league as well as you can know it. I just felt from the moment that this probably was going to end poorly and not necessarily because of Ezra Henriksen, but because this club still has not figured out who they are, what they want to be, and found a way to plot a path toward that. It just, the moves don't feel coherent.
Mm-hmm.
The culture around the club when it comes to...
And that's filtering out on the field
the
as
fans.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, those are people that care the most about this. Those fans. And when they, over the course of years and years and years, are just like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Given the level of commitment they had, especially in the early days, and the culture that was built around that club, you know, under Bob and then on, you know, on the way and, you know, Dennis Hamlin and all these other guys that created a truly great club in this league. Like, those days are just too far gone.
Does he get another managerial job?
I hope so. I think he deserves one for sure.
I hope so too. But I think in the meantime, he's going to land squarely on his feet somewhere as a top assistant
in Seattle
and maybe bide his time to hopefully get a job where he has more of a foundation for success.
This is one of the tough things, which is there are only so many head coaching jobs.
If you get offered one, even if it's a tough one, you just kind of got to take it.
There's also normally a reason they open up. And it's not normally because they just won a championship and the roster's exactly the
oh,
same.
Oh, it's not?
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. It's like that's sort of, I mean, we talked about it with like Robin Fraser, right? Colorado, they've kind of shown like, here's our ceiling. We're not going to spend past this. Like, you did well, and this is kind of where we're at. But for Robin Fraser, it's like, well, he wants to be a head coach. So you go get that job. Now, MLS is unique in that you do have some situations where someone could go home or they go to another league, whatever. And so there could be Steve Cherundolo, you could argue, right? Didn't walk into the worst situation, but they didn't make the playoffs the year before. So it's tough to get like a really good setup. I would say, I don't know. Freddy Juarez, we saw leave a head coaching job for an assistant job in Seattle. Brian Schmetzer is one of the more senior coaches. You would assume they're going to start talking about a succession plan there. Ezra is as deep in Seattle, I think, as anyone, except that you already brought it.
Boy, I would not assume that. No, and Schmetz.
Yeah, he's going to go until he's
like, he's like, look, you guys are my boys, but elbows out. Like, yeah, this is mine.
I'm looking at the East right now, and you had just alluded to, because I was asking how many points potentially have they dropped. You said 4, and I thought it was way more, but they have 11 points. I mean, if they did collect those 4 points, that puts them just under New York City in 5th spot.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know. I just think it's so... I think that he reformed how Chicago played. They looked structurally better. They looked like they were working harder together. Yes, after the 30 minutes left in the game, they tended to throw games away, weren't able to close it out. But it's a bigger thing. You know, this is a
structural
thing.
This is a structural thing. There's a ton of pressure within the organization and the person who's going to get that. I mean, this is coaching. Like any coach, professional coach will tell you that this is coaching. Like the first domino that's going to fall is going to be the coach.
And sucks.
You can't get rid of all the players. If you're looking around, who's the one you move? What do you change? You change the coach. So that's the change. But that's what I'm saying about organizationally. There's a ton of pressure now on George Heights. And there has been a ton of pressure on George Heights to return a massive market with real history of success in this league to a place of just being good enough.
Yeah, being
not even of being great.
Be competitive, think, be yes, fun to watch, just
consistently
be coherent.
A coherent organization that moves forward.
I love how they were all kind of lost for words right now. We're all like,
because the other part about it is
it's the same. We've had this conversation a ton of times.
And since George Heights has taken over and his position under an owner who has said, I'll spend, like, give me the players, let's go get them. And we've seen that pretty consistently. There are other teams in MLS who have hired people to similar positions who have had more success in a quicker time. And if you are a Chicago Fire fan, you have to be sitting there saying, who were we talking to when Chris Henderson was talking to Inter Miami? Who were we talking to when Tim Bezbachenko was talking to Columbus? Like, you,
why did
who were we
did
talking
Garth
to
choose?
When Chris Albright was talking to FC Cincinnati? Why did Garth Lagerwey, a Chicago native, leave the Seattle Sounders, who had just won CCL for the first time in MLS history, his golden goose, his holy grail, for a club on the other side of the country, and not come back to Chicago? And I think that's where, for Chicago fans, it's frustrating and it's clear the lack of success that they've had, the opportunity that's existed, and maybe the lack of understanding internally in the club of what would succeed.
If you were, let me ask you this.
Because Chicago's not a hard sell for a player.
If you were Jim Curtin, and nice. let's say,
Jim Curtin is going to leave today with so many jobs.
As many jobs as he has jerseys.
If you were Jim Curtin, would you rather, let's say that everything with Philly, like the contract stuff doesn't work out and you're looking at your next job, like you're not going to stay in Philly, so you're choosing, and the Red Bulls come to you and Chicago Fire comes to you.
Red Bulls, and on half the money, I'd go.
No way.
100%. More opportunity.
Reminder, though, Jim Curtin did play for Chicago as a player.
I'm still going to New York Red Bulls.
Okay. He wouldn't have to move, probably. He could probably just drive.
There you go.
Yeah. Because I think he lives north of Philly. And
so how attractive a job is the Chicago Fire job? It's sort of what I'm asking in a roundabout way. Because I think if you're the Fire, like the dream, a dream would be that you could somehow convince Jim Curtin
to be there.
But
in its current
state, that is not. I don't see that happening.
With this structure, you could not. I think someone else would have to be hiring, or you are offering him more control.
Yeah, you're saying, hey, you're now soccer czar.
You're GM and coach, and we'll have a president who runs things that you're not a part of.
Yeah, there'll be a sport. You'll have a technical director.
But you'll be one of what, five in the league? Four in the league? Yeah. And that would be a position for him where he's growing and he's getting more control. Plus, I think we know Jim Curtin well enough that there's a level of romanticism for him of like he could go back and rebuild what Bob had built, what he had been successful in.
The question is, he said he wants to go to Europe. Does that get him closer to Europe? I'm not so sure about that.
Don't they have a DP who tripped all over himself, Ignacio Alacedo, who now plays for Lugano because their owner owns a Swiss team?
That's fair.
It's a way to get there.
That's fair.
What a weird Monday.
What a very
strange Monday. Two coaches let go of 12 weeks into the season.
Nashville, by the way, just absolutely worked over the Fire. I think I mentioned that. But Hani Mukhtar had a bunch of people hitting us up from Nashville on this one.
Yeah, you guys Vizi kept says, asking what's wrong in Nashville, and I kept saying nothing.
Yeah, just
and just wait it, 5 weeks.
Yeah, just there you go. It's the half-life. He says, Hani should be going for his third consecutive MVP, but it's hard to admit you were wrong about Heal, and we understand. We weren't wrong about Carlos Heal and have never been wrong about Carlos Heal. Apparently don't like that he won the MVP 2 years ago. Hani got his MVP, guys. He's in the running for MVP. Let's talk about the MVP leader, though.
The Revs set a points record 2 years ago?
No, no, yeah. It's absurd. It's absurd. Anyway, the Quakes handed LAFC their first loss of 2023, Dave. 45,000 plus at Levi's Stadium to see this one get done. San Jose with a marquee home win, their biggest win so far under Lucci. Quakes 2023, who is a legend and always hitting us up, always with that multicolored Chris Wondolowski avatar that I just immediately, as soon as I see my Twitter notifications, know that it is you, Quakes 2023, says Lucci has to be in the running for coach of the year. I expect Carnell would be the favorite. Who besides those two would you consider? Maybe we'll get to that conversation, but I think we can for sure say that Lucci is there. There is a question mark about the road form. He's got time to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
What did this win say to you about the Quakes and the project? And where is Christian Espinoza right now in your MVP rankings?
So Christian Espinoza was number one for me before this weekend. So that really helped. And two goals, one not from a penalty, was not bad for my campaign. I think him and Georgi Petrovic were my top two coming into this week because we voted on it for the month of May or whatever we vote on recently. So I have actually thought about it. So him, Thiago Almada is another one that's up there as well. But for Espinoza, I see in this goal, again, what I've talked about a couple times, which is for him, the game has gotten easier because there's patterns and things are worked on. He is coming inside in anticipation and therefore scoring more goals because it doesn't just randomly bounce to the far post. And now he has all the work to do. You watch this goal, the first goal. It is a pressing moment out of an LAFC goal kick that Montero and Yule do really well with deeper. And then it's three passes, but it's lightning quick from the back to the front. And Espinoza is already inside for Montero to slide it to him because he knows what's happening and can anticipate. And that's been a lot of his goals this year is he's already in the box on the far post so that he can finish where last year, if you look at it, that ball would have gone through and he would have picked it up on the edge of the box and had three guys to beat and tried to. And that's why I've said for a while, the underlying numbers on him were great, which is like he's good. The team wasn't there around him. Now it is.
Well, the chance creation and assist numbers were good, too. It was the goal scorer.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating him saying, even in the offseason, he was in Argentina, like, I need to score more goals.
He said he needs to shoot on goal more.
This San Jose, for me, and I'm going to get crucified from Nashville fans, I think they are one of the best transition into defense into attack teams right now in Major League Soccer through 11 weeks because of the quickness in which they do it. And you saw it against LAFC, but it's not just knock the ball into the biggest space. There is a play of pattern in a transition where your most dangerous player is, whether it's a Bobasi, whether it's Espinoza playing in those half positions, your midfielders, those late midfielder runs. I always call it maybe the front five, I'll say, your two attacking midfielders within this side. The rotation of them, not only the front three, but that front five has been electric. They're all in the most dangerous spot defensively as well, just tracking back. But offensively, it's so hard to pick up players because it's the overlaps, the underlaps, the transition in rotation as well when the ball is moving forward. I love this team. I love watching this team. And I'm buzzing that they did hand LAFC their first loss on the season because if it was any team, I was hoping it was going to be this team because they are so fun to watch right now.
And you said sort of, I think you asked, what did we learn or something? I don't remember. But there was pressure here, like LAFC coming off CCL at Levi's Stadium, 45,000. This was not oh, like, can you be better than we thought you were? This was like, let's expect a performance.
Make an impression.
And they performed at that exact level, especially in the first half. They give up the goal. They still proceed to go on and win, which I think is also impressive. Grueso's been, I don't know if we can call him the signing of, I don't know how we do this with guys who are coming back, but when you talk about those midfield rotations, the freedom for Jackson Yule and Jamiro Montero, that exists because of Carlos Grueso. And he has been as big a signing as anyone made in this offseason. And now when you go down that list of teams where it's like, this is a good team, who's their six? This is a good team, who's their six? They have one of those. And so they have the potential to challenge everyone in the West.
Obobese, I think, just continues to go from strength to strength. It's not always finishing for him, but his hold-up play, his vision, his passing ability, like, you can trust. And when you have that trust, both in the positional play and where your teammates will be, but also that you have this fulcrum to play off of, things start to change quickly. And this has been team chaos for a while now. The one guy I have not yet seen be at what I think is his best is Cade Cowell. And I think the mix in the front is good in the sense that he's going to stretch the line. He's going to be more of a straight line runner. Christian Espinosa is going to be tucking in, trying to get in positions to take advantage of that. But I do wonder how Lucci can get just a little bit more efficiency, good decision making, and take advantage of Cade Cowell's physical gifts.
I think it's just quality, because the spaces he's in, and I think the decisions he's making are right. It's just that ball that he plays in for Obobese just has been intercepted because it hasn't been the right pass, or he hasn't been hit well. But I do think the way they're getting him pinched in sort of on the left channel so he can go both ways, which for a defender means like I can't anticipate, I can't channel him, I think it's been really good. And credit to them, by the way, in this game. So obviously they lost a center back, right, coming into the season. Yeah. Mensah has been great. I think Carlos Capo has been one of the best signings of the offseason. I think he's been phenomenal. They don't have him, but they slide Paul Marie over. Trauco comes in. Like, so this, again, I'm just saying, this wasn't an A-plus lineup for San Jose. They filled in at goal as well, and they're still able to get the win.
Where would Lucci be in your guys' coach of the year ballot rankings?
Right now, I'd say top three. Right now.
Yeah. Carnell's one, and it seems pretty.
You think he's
Carnell's one, even with some of the recent sort of sliding?
It's an expansion team.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
He makes the playoffs with them. He's probably going to win. And he's second in the West right now.
You've got Chirundolo in a CCL final. You've got Bruce Arena with the Revs
doesn't
back on
count,
top.
Though. Did we vote Schmetzer coach of the year last year?
No, but there's a long season. I'm just saying, we're talking right now. Like, LAFC could fall off. That's certainly possible, but. And Cincinnati are there, too, and they haven't hit what you would consider even second gear.
I got to give it to Trundolo right now for me is my number one spot because of CCL and the way that he's managing league. Yes, they're coming off a loss. I have to, though.
I thought everyone just assumed Carnell had already won it.
No,
I think it's much more competitive.
Interesting.
I think there's about five guys in there right now that have legitimate cases.
What if Bruce Arena wins it again? That'd be great.
Who really cares?
Yeah. A bunch of idiots voting for me.
Okay, before let's get into Reynoso. I'm wearing the jersey here. We haven't talked about it. Emmanuel Reynoso is back in Minnesota. The statement is this from Minnesota United. Quote, Emmanuel Reynoso has returned to Minnesota as he works toward reintegration with the club. He remains unavailable for all team activities until further notice. Minnesota lose this weekend. They've been on a tough run. They lose to the Caps 3-2. Tied for the fifth fewest goals scored in Major League Soccer. They survived and thrived even a little bit at the beginning, yeah. Kalen. And now not so much, but now Reynoso's back, which was a shock to me. Like, I did not.
I had to text Adrian.
Think I was going to see this. I thought this was going to stretch on much longer, but especially given he like missed a flight a couple weeks ago.
Flights. But okay. I text Adrian when this broke because I was like, there's no way. And he was like, yeah. So my thing is with Emmanuel Reynoso, it's great for Minnesota. It's great for Major League Soccer because he is such an electric player. We were touching on it with MLS 360. And I asked the guys, how would you find this? One of your best players and you've seen now the dip in games. Maybe that if he came back, maybe the first five games of the season, you're probably thinking as a player, we've done it without you now. We've had good performances, but these last six, they haven't been effective in that final third. They've not really created any good chances. And then their strikers have not been finishing. So they've had blunders in games. And Vancouver was a perfect moment of that. But as a player, you're bringing someone back in that, you know, didn't report to preseason, hasn't reported. Now it's match day 11 and he's finally come back in. So it's the reintegration with not only the fitness, But the mental side of it, the physical side of it, the emotional side of it, not only for Emmanuel Reynoso, but for the players. This is a huge job for Adrian Heath. The one thing I will say about Adrian Heath is he's a good man manager. He's going to be able to man manage this. And you're always going to want your star man in the game, especially now for Minnesota. But as a player, I don't know, it's difficult because you're like, man, you didn't show up for us. You're our best player. We relied so heavily on you. Our team is built around you and you didn't show up. I agree
with you. I do think, though, that what you touched on, which was if this had happened 5 games ago, it would be harder.
Yeah, no, for sure. If they were now playing, thinking, God, just we don't even care if you're probably fit or not. Can you play 30 minutes for us?
And it's like, I think you saw, especially this week, to take Amarillo off in the 30th minute to bring on Rosales. And like, it was basically like, we're just going to play 3D mids because we don't really have attacking players and we're getting played through and it's not like we're going to score. So, so I think you look at like the experience Robin Lud's had and just how hard the game is for him in this role and Fragapane. And I think even Songbin he hasn't played with Reynoso, but like he looked more comfortable at center forward this week than as a 10. I think there's a lot of guys in that team who are like, yeah, I wish he had been here, but my life gets easier if he returns.
It doesn't change the reality that the whole thing was still built around
him. Yeah.
Like, all these players are better in complementary positions revolving around Reynoso's abilities, of which we know they're prodigious. Like, this dude can be the best player in the league, the best player on the ball, the best chance creator in Major League Soccer. The key word there is obviously can. And to go to what you were saying about, you know, all these things that he has to regain, number one is trust.
Yeah.
Right. Trust with the coaching staff, trust with the players, trust with his colleagues, the people that are going to have to go out there and make it so he doesn't have to run and defend and harry and do all these other things. Make it so that he can be the luxury player that he is at his very, very best. So he's got to regain that. And that takes, you know, time for one. It takes fitness. It does, you know, need has a way of rebuilding some of those things. Yeah. But ultimately, it just takes commitment. Like, if you're in that locker room, if you're part of a team, if you're part of a group of people working together, if you're part of a family, whatever it is, you need to feel that that person is committed to what you're trying to do together, is willing to sacrifice, is willing to put themselves second, is willing to say, hey, I screwed up.
That is it for me.
He's
got to come back into that locker room and say, I screwed up royally, guys. Apologies. I am going to work my ass off in order to be Emmanuel Reynoso from all the seasons before. I'm going to be doing the double days. I'm going to be taking accountability. I'm going to be sitting in and watching game film. I'm going to be sitting down with players individually that I'm going to have build those partnerships with to be like, look, I screwed up, but I'm here. This is kind of what I'm seeing in your game. Because he does have such a high level of soccer IQ. So even working with players like Sumbin coming in from a different country,
he's
saying,
gonna level him up.
Exactly. Like, this is where I think we can excel together. So I feel like he is a player that will do that. I know Adrian Heath is going to hold him to that accountability of being like, this is what we need from you. It's not going to be just as easy as you rolling in and getting into our starting 11, even though I know Adrian Heath, he's a winner and he wants to win games. So he's thinking, God, if this guy was probably fit next week, he'd be into my 11. But there's a lot of repairs that need to happen, not only for Emmanuel, but also for Minnesota United.
And there's a lot of ifs here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ifs. Like, if he does this, he can do this. If he's ready, if he's fit, if he's at that level, like, you have to, we can't just assume that that's all going to be the case, given everything that's happened.
I think selfishly, all Minnesota fans want to assume.
We just don't know. So wait and see on this one. All right. Enough about Minnesota United, say Caps fans everywhere. Caps unbeaten in 8. They've won 3 of their last 5. Simon Bescher is getting another goal. Doyle is just killing himself that he's not here to celebrate it.
I feel weird sitting in Doyle's seat, I'm not going to lie.
Do
I don't love it.
All you have to do is just be super proud of anyone who's ever played soccer at UConn.
Yeah, that's a big, that's a starting
perfectly.
Point.
Yeah,
that's a starting
point. Like, I also have to know the league from like 20 years ago. Well, so
no
I'd like
one
to take
knows.
Me and my Canadian
a dash
tuxedo
of bitterness.
Back over there.
Yeah. We need to add a dash of bitterness and cynicism to you.
Sadness.
Yeah.
I love Doyle.
By the way, Vanni Sartini quote said, we're very good, but we are growing a lot. We've never been a team who has to manage a lot of leads, and we need to be better at that. We scored. Okay, let's keep our business intact. Let's keep the ball a little more and go on. They had a lead. They struggled with said lead, but they have been very, very good of late outside of CONCACAF Champions League against LAFC.
Which is unfortunate. I do think that like hit them at the wrong time. And if this ends up being the start, which is like historically they're horrendous for 4 months, now they're bad for 2 months.
That's progress.
Great. They're 5 feet ahead of where we thought they should be, and that's awesome. They're fun. they just play with a ton of energy. Yeah. And one of the things I like about the way this team plays, and I think you saw it like perfectly with the group out there with Schopf in there, who we haven't really seen as much, and Vite back, and Gold, is like, they hit a lot of blind balls into dangerous areas where they know they're going to have runners. And there's a ton of rotation in that front, like you talked about, San Jose, five or six. They're all comfortable in the same areas. So anyone can make those runs. And so when you see like Gold checking back, he'll hit a blind ball over his left shoulder because Gressel, Vite, Chop, White, one of them is going to make that run and everyone else is going to crash the box. And so I think at home, they play with a decent amount of energy. They play high speed. Kubas is the difference maker of like when he's in there, it's steady, it's good. And Takayoka, I think, is already in the goalkeeper of the year running.
So they haven't lost in league since the first two matches straight out. That was RSL San Jose. They had some issues, let's say, as Vanny referred back to them, closing out matches in those. But since then, five draws, three wins, those three wins coming all at home, Montreal, Portland, and Minnesota. So still something to be proved for Vancouver. And I think if you look at their games, this is kind of a perfect encapsulation. Like Brian White, the underlying numbers said that he was going to have a moment like this, and he had the moment, but there is inconsistency in the quality and consistency of their attacking players. They all have some good attributes. They all have moments where they should do better than they do. Mm-hmm. I think Ryan Gold is consistently in that place where you're like, okay, well, I see all the ability here, but where's the final product? And then he pops out and shows it to you. You're like, okay, well, is that going to be consistent? Brian White, that's Brian White. Simon Betcher has been sort of the microwave off the bench. If they could find a little bit of consistency there and push out some of these nil-nil draws or 1-1s that they have outside of the every, you know, now and then explosion that we saw against the Loons or against Montreal, this could be a team that climbs the Western Conference standings. All right, let's talk revenge. Revancha.
I love revenge.
What was more satisfying for you guys? Joseph Martinez's revenge or Kevin Cabral's revenge?
Cabral, 100%.
You think that was more satisfying?
I mean, Joseph's going to have a statue built of him at that place, and they let him choose where he wanted to go and didn't really get much in return.
Yeah, but they didn't, let him have a last hurrah. They started Dom Dwyer over him. They had all the drama at the end in Atlanta. Like, they sort of, he didn't get to say goodbye to his teammates. They sort of like pushed him out.
First of all, it's called a phone. You could talk to whoever you want, whenever you want.
Yeah, but when you've done that much for a club, you would want like a nice farewell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they let him go wherever he wanted to go. So fair play.
A nice chicken and rice spread, perhaps.
Stop. Behave.
Cabral, you talked about all the stuff he went through at the beginning. And then the LA Galaxy. I just want to make sure I have this correct. The second last place team in the Western Conference right now on 6 points, looked at the team last year and said, you're the problem. They pointed at Kevin Cabral. The manager's still there. The assistants are still there. The front office is still there. All the other players are still there, right? They've flipped their roster as little as almost anyone else in MLS. Martin Caceres was already in. Like, Tyler Boyd, the only addition?
Mavinga.
And Kevin Cabral walked out of the building, and it was his fault. And he came back, and he said, I got news for you. And he was good the whole game, by the way. It wasn't good, just the goal. And he did the things that he does, which are, damn it, man. When it's good, it's effortless, and it's easy, and you do things no one else can do, and then it's a tame shot. But
he that like nearly solo
beat three guys.
I'm cooking all of you right now just to show you what you're missing moment.
But then
I wanted it so much for him.
If he can keep that going now, will be amazing. I'm still sticking with Joseph Martinez. Former club breaking Bradley Wright Phillips' record, quickest man to 100 goals in Major League Soccer, and getting a brace, first touch off the bench, stepping up to the spot, considering the form that he's had at Inter Miami, it does not get any better than that. Even when we asked him, and
perfect storytelling.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say ending, because I feel like it's just starting for him in the south of Florida. But even when we had asked him, like, what was that feeling like going? Was it a better feeling or a bittersweet feeling going against your old club? He gave the perfect answer that you would give to media. But deep down, considering how things ended for him in Atlanta, you know, he was like, it couldn't have been a better story to write.
Even the script writers would be like, we couldn't possibly have him get benched and delay it all the way to match day 11.
They're
for
on
Atlanta
strike,
United.
So.
No goals. Yeah, that's fair.
So they wouldn't have written anything.
They couldn't have.
Wrote anything. Right.
Can I just say I called it? I called it at the beginning.
I heard that. Here's some quotes from Joseph that I thought were funny. Quote, this was one of the strangest moments of my life. It feels weird. It feels strange, like a mixture of happiness and sadness. Quote, I was very nervous. I think after the day that my son was born, today was one of the most difficult days of my life. Obviously, both circumstances are much different.
So weird.
What? I mean,
those are just incredible quotes all around. The fact that it was his first touch.
The first touch, obviously incredible penalty kick. But the second goal.
Sick.
And it's a moment where.
Great ball by Yedlin, though.
Yeah.
Great ball.
And like old Joseph, too, but, of instinctive finishing.
Not just instinctive. The thing about Joseph in MLS was he was a physical presence because he would throw his body around and he was more athletic and wanted it more. And he was the shortest player on the field, and yet everyone knew where he was. And if he went up for a header, people were like scared. But that's who he was. And then he got injured. We haven't seen the same player, and it's lack of explosion, it's lack of comfort. But I think there's that element of why I don't want to throw my body into this because I don't know how I'm going to come out of it. And that mindset and that goal wasn't that, right? The full slide and extension. So the quality on the finish is absurd. The reading of the play, the timing. But to see him sort of give out for it or go all in for it, we haven't seen that Joseph a ton since 2018, 2019. And if he can bring that half element back, you know, I watched this game before he even came in, and you can see a little bit of like, Campagna doesn't mind dropping in. He'll pick up the ball with his back to goal. He'll set people up. He'll hit a long switch. Like, he's a soccer player. He's not just a big body. So you could see the idea of maybe getting them to work together. I think the way Kramaski's played is different than what
he's got to stay on the pitch
and Gregory. And I think he fits in with the little 4-4-2, you know, pinching in off the wing. Negri can give you width then instead, Yedlin. So you could see some of the ideas potentially working for Miami in general. You come off Sean Mota now on top of Gregory, and to come in and win is
huge.
By the way, what's crazy, and we talk about the injuries for Joseph Martinez and him taking Bradley's record away, he obliterated Bradley's record. And by the way, Bradley had obliterated Taylor Twellman prior to that.
Right. Don't do that to BWP.
I'm not. I'm just. He did
two
it. But
guys
like
that worked for us
17
here in Major
games.
Soccer.
It's a full half season faster with the complication of injuries.
It would have been faster
in Atlanta in chaos.
To be honest.
I mean, 142 games to 100 goals. Yeah. And look, if things had stayed the same in Atlanta or he hadn't got hurt, this would have been even faster.
I think we could have said it about maybe TT as well, retiring early, 27 concussions.
Yeah.
Don't yeah me. That's
no,
true.
I'm saying yeah. I agree. That's an agreement. I'm
TT, you heard it.
Kalen,
I'm trying to stick
stumped.
Up for you.
This is Anders' fault for always chiming in right when someone else is talking. I'm like, I can't hear anyone.
Well, so I mean, we don't need to put an asterisk on this because it's, as you said, obliterated. He did tear his knee in the COVID year, so he missed less games because he was hurt during the time window.
Yeah, but I don't
less games.
In the grand scheme, but you still tore your knee.
For sure. He got back. He scored goals. Yeah. This is why we did think he would push for records, because the conversation 6 years ago was Almiron will leave. Joseph wants to stay. He's going to be the consistent pillar that Atlanta is going to continue to bring Barco in, and then Barco will leave, and then they'll bring the next guy in and he'll leave. But Joseph would be the constant, and this would be a team that would always have a home field advantage and always be competitive, and he would always score goals. And so in fairness, the Atlanta franchise went down with him, because that's kind of what they were tied to. And now they've reset themselves, I think, and have a vision. But that was the plan. And that was why 142 and what's Kai chasing right now?
What Kai's chasing all time?
Yeah. All time. He's third right now.
Yeah, he's got...
It's like
143.
So it's a 43 goal difference for... And then Wando's up.
Joseph's turning 30 next week. Do you think he could get up there into like close to Chris Wondolowski or anything like that?
Just not based on who he is now.
No? Okay.
I would love to say
I would love to say
like,
yes too, but I don't.
Look at what the injuries he's been through and then all the years Kai had to play. And again, he's doing it in a faster rate when he does, but
he's
going to play 8 more years or 5 or 4?
Big question. big question. You had
unless Messi's feeding him.
You had a 22 player of the weekend here from Inter Miami.
David Ruiz. Yeah. Unbelievable. Like I said, so Gregory, I thought was the most important player for this team. He got hurt. Jean Mota, I think, has been very good as well. And I like his game. Bit more of a connector, less of a ball winner. He's now out for 4 months.
4 months. 4 to 6 months, potentially.
So that's your starting center mid. And then add in, coming into the year, Bryce Duke was probably the third guy. So all three starting center mids for Inter Miami are not part of their team. We have said it a million times. They are leaving spots open for Messi and friends. So that hamstrings them internally. But to have a homegrown step up and play at that level, and they've done some good work to bring in an emergency addition alongside him. I thought he was great in this game. When he did make mistakes, he drew fouls in a way in which like he could feel
the
pressure.
PK was one of those instances. It's a loose touch, but
yeah. Kramaski's there.
And ask Machapchol what he's up to in that play. You know.
And Ruiz had other moments where it's like long touch. He feels pressure, but he gets his body in front, wins a foul, kills the play. I thought he was really quick to get the ball out of his feet. It helped Yedlin get into space a number of times. I thought he linked up with Kramaski. I thought it was phenomenal.
Yedlin looked like a different player because he struggled this season. So maybe that, I didn't even think maybe that, because you obviously get to watch a little bit more of the games. We get maybe 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here. But that 100%, when you have someone that gives you that confidence that they're going to win tackles, they're going to fill in your spots, they're going to make that recovery run for you, especially with someone like DeAndre Yedlin, that
gives you a freedom.
It gives you freedom. Mm-hmm. Like it led to the second
goal. I'm going to make the run. Why not? Why not occupy that space?
And why not, by the way? Miami. Like, it is the most talent-rich area, arguably, in America, and then arguably in the world, because that's the type of country we live in. LA's in there. Texas cities are in there. New York's in there. Like, two starting homegrowns in this game, in Ruiz and Kramaski.
Chris Henderson, can we just give a shout-out to him?
And
can we clone him?
And Phil Neville.
Yeah.
Because Phil Neville doesn't have to play.
No.
The kids, he doesn't have a ton of choice right now. Yeah, he doesn't have to
say, does he not have to?
But he's getting the performances out of them.
For sure.
And he's putting them in a spot where they feel comfortable.
Well, and to pull him out of that 6-game losing streak when the pressure was mounting. We're talking about that pressure with other coaches.
And the games that they're doing it in, though. Columbus, Atlanta, then they play the Revs. Who's the other game? They have a big game as well. Nashville, I think. Revs and Nashville are next for them. So
they play New England next week.
Doesn't get easy.
And then what's after that? Is
Nashville, Orlando. And then Montreal.
Montreal, all of a sudden.
They host Charleston.
Not a check mark for that sort of thing anyway. Rapids, by the way, haven't lost since March 19th. Kevin Cabral, part of this win in LA this weekend, 3-1. Their only losses this season at Seattle, at San Jose, and then Minnesota at home. Minnesota's the only one of those where you're like, not a great one. But a lot of draws. Same thing as the Caps, really. Two wins in their last seven. All the other ones are ties. They've been sort of on the precipice. Like, okay, you guys are creating the chances. You're not finishing the chances, and they finally got it done in LA on this one. The quote from Robin Fraser afterwards was, "This feels like the type of performance that we have been very, very close to having for quite a while now." You get a set-piece goal from Lamas Abubakar, which is what he does. He had a number of those last year. I think Diego Rubio sets up Cabral, and then Jonathan Lewis off the bench. He's an absolute menace off the bench. Here you are with a big win. So Colorado still rolling right along. LA, not so much. The quote from Chicharito, and there were just reams of
quotes. Can I just say Chicharito
after this? The one that sums up the entirety of everything he said was, quote, LA Galaxy being an almost last in the conference? Nah. Like, nah. And just everything he said, basically, nothing is going the right way. Quote, we need to do different things to get out of this. I don't know what. We need to figure it out. But we cannot keep doing the same things and waiting for the same results. It's very frustrating, man. I don't know what else to say. We need so many things to change from starting from. I believe more people need to come speak to the media to face things.
That was my biggest takeaway. That.
We're the same people speaking always. Who's he talking about? Is he talking about players? Is he talking about front office?
I'm just going to nod my head.
Yes.
There. That's not players. That's people from above in higher positions. And fair play to have a player, because he's the only player, let's be honest, and very few players in Major League Soccer that can speak like that about an organization or about their team, is to call for people that are higher up
and
in positions.
He is the face of all this.
He
thing,
is.
For sure.
Yeah.
And he's talked a lot. And you guys were like, when we talked about this before, and now it's like, oh, great. And it's like, I'm tired of hearing it from Chicharito. So I think that's fair for him of like, I'm tired of talking about it.
Yep.
The other would be play better. and then you wouldn't have to talk about this as much. He has not played well. He is not a positive part of this team. There was one or two pullbacks here where I think one where he stumbled over the ball, another one where he didn't react, and he, you know, anger at himself, you could see in the moment of like, I didn't read that play. Yeah. So I would love to stop hearing this one for Galaxy fans, but also because like you do have some level of control. You play on the team. So,
quote, we're the LA Galaxy, man. When I say we need to behave and understand that we're giving ourselves a chance to be the greatest. We're the greatest effing organization in the U.S. Were. At the least, you give everything. And if teams are better than us, I can take that. But I can't take this loss. I can't take it. All right, Galaxy, we've talked a lot about you in these terms. All
spoilers, Uri Rossell in 2023 was not the solution.
One touch takes. Seattle 1, Sporting Kansas City 2. Sporting win, finally. What do you think, Dave? Give us a one-touch take here.
Congratulations. Gotti Kinda back, had the assist on the first goal. Tommy back, Russell back, Pulido scores. This, I think, for SKC fans, just enjoy that and just get excited for the future and don't worry about bigger picture right now.
Yeah. More runners in the box, more talent on the field, more results you would assume, hope, pray will follow. Toronto, New England. Toronto, 0. New England, 2. Matt Hedges is out for Toronto. That is
huge loss.
That's tough for them to deal with. They're not a team that if you take one of their key players out, they're going to do very well. And they didn't in this game. They don't create big chances. But by God, Bobby Wood does on his own, turning him over, going full length of the field to score. When they signed Bobby Wood, I thought it was a Bruce Arena signing and maybe not in the best way. But it turns out it was a Bruce Arena signing in the best way. A guy that still had some in the tank, and nobody is better at taking a veteran who needs that opportunity and to be put in the right position than Bruce to just siphon that gas right out. He finds a way. So Bobby Wood scores. He's got 3 goals, 2 assists. Carlos Heel is back doing Carlos Heel things. And if you give the Revs a lead on the road, they're probably going to strangle you defensively and wait for another opportunity to beat you. And that's exactly what they did. So Revs at the top of the East. A wonderful season continues for them. Kalen, Montreal. It's now a wonderful season for them. 2, Orlando 0. Yeah, somehow, some way.
Because they have the best bagels in North America.
Are we getting Montreal bagels?
We are. We're getting them on Wednesday.
No.
They're actually flying them here today. We'll get. You're not a fan.
What royal treatment we.
Who are we getting dumplings
from?
Yeah,
we just got word that.
We're getting a lot of free food. We're on the come up.
Montreal, for me, though, it's been a shift since Bryce Duke and Ariel Lassiter came there, but more so with Bryce Duke. And it's what I saw with him at Inter Miami. And I know a lot of people were saying, you can't build a team around Bryce Duke. He doesn't have enough experience in Major League Soccer. He's too inconsistent. But from what I've seen from him at Inter Miami, he is that midfielder that seems to always be involved, whether it's getting on the half turn, going at a back four, the intricate play on wing play, late runs into the box, pulling defenders out with his movement. Yes, he's young, but his soccer IQ, both on and off the ball, makes him very successful. And you're seeing that with Montreal, a shift, 3 wins on the trot and 3 clean sheets as well. I mean, that's since these 2 new players have come over. Ariel Lassiter just getting the start last week. And that, I think that was his first start, correct me if I'm wrong, in league play, or second start in league play. But they just add a different dynamic to this Montreal side that I think that they needed. And fair play to Montreal. I like it. I like the turnaround.
Was going
to
take some time probably to switch from
and Sean
Nancy
Yair,
to Lozada.
My boy. That's your boy.
But also all of you, they lost 6 of the first games. They played 1 true home game.
Yeah.
Major League Soccer, baby.
5-game half-life. You're back,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, exactly.
You're back.
Don't say that. I had them 3rd, I think, on my prediction
preseason.
Before. Yeah, preseason.
He was hammering me about, are they still going to make the playoffs? Is it still a playoff team? Are they still going to make the playoffs?
It's still a fair question.
Danny Canadian Phillips. Championship this week, though.
Oh, yeah.
Get hyped.
Open Cup, too. Danny Phillips hit
Shout
us
out
up
to Vancouver,
from
new
Orlando,
CPL
said,
team there.
All caps, what is wrong with Orlando? You guys waste the first 6 minutes of every show with chaotic banter, then cover a handful of large market teams for the majority, touch on a few random teams for 60 seconds or less, and ignore the rest of the league. Please spend a few minutes on Orlando City, and we will allocate a few minutes to Orlando City on Wednesday. You probably don't like that answer. We had 2 coaches get... You know,
just pull a car and
fired.
So, you know.
And Doobie asks, what's the secret behind Orlando's consistent inconsistency? We will attempt to answer that question with Doyle and Kalen on Wednesday.
C2.
No Doyle.
C2.
C2.
Does K2 get a call up on Wednesday?
I don't know.
You're like, please no.
I have no idea. C2 and K, I thought K2 wasn't a thing, so now I'm just confused.
Are we
physically able to have two Kalins on one show?
That sounds like something we need to test.
I feel like that's the day where we need to bring maybe Bailey's and Coffee's into a hidden cup for that.
Then that's just Carr and Kyle. And then that sounds like a radio show in
the
itself.
Carr and Kyle show.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh god.
Cincinnati 2, DC 1. Cincinnati covered up Benteke pretty well in this game, and yet he still managed to have a few game-changing potentially moments.
That pass he slid in. Poof.
He just is he's a handful, but not enough of a handful to slow down Cincy, who still don't seem like they're playing it anywhere close to their best, but getting wins. I mean, Lucho Olympico, that's tight. Mm-hmm. That's one to check out. Just if you're looking for highlights after the weekend
and
to sort of you know, your inverted pyramid of what you should watch. But yeah, tied with New England, I believe, atop the Shield, and there's more to come. Now, there was a scary moment as well. Brenner with that Lewis O'Brien tackle in the 98th minute. It didn't look as bad as, it didn't look terrible, but Brenner certainly seemed to come up pretty lame with it. So we hope the best for him. Obviously, his move to Udinese already set, but Cincinnati with a nice win. Give me a one-touch take on Charlotte 3, NYCFC 2, Dave.
Good performance for Charlotte. I'll start with NYCFC, though. This is a team that's been one of the deepest in MLS over the last few years. That's not the case anymore. And so you see Chanot go down. You see James Sands shifted back. Thought Sands struggled at center back, and they struggled in midfield without him. And so you sort of see the knock-on effect for a team that right now, their best 11, I think, can compete with everyone. Nothing past that, though, is at the level it needs to be. They brought Talis Magno off the bench at halftime, and that helped them a lot. And they got back into it. They fought. They pushed. But they haven't won a road game yet. And they play at Red Bulls this weekend. And they still have another road game left in this stand. So I think there's a lot of question marks right now for NYCFC of, like, if they can't control the game perfectly the way they do at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field, wherever it is, what else is there? How do they win games? And I don't think they have an answer for that right now. And as a young team, I think it's going to take a little while for them to get there. And then for Charlotte, Capetti scores goals. I thought Miram gave them something they're looking for, which is just even gravitational pull along that left side to let the center midfield runners find gaps, to let Capetti sort of anticipate what's going to happen with the guys behind him. That alone was worthwhile for them. So a big win to do so, still with the injuries at center back. Derek Jones had to finish the game at center back. That's a huge problem for them. But I think there's a lot of positives in this one.
Portland 2, Austin 2, Kalen, Sebastian Driussi out for a month.
That's my take. I mean, you look at this Austin side, 7 matches without a win, and then you just lose your star man with Giroussi for a month. Problems, problems, problems over in Austin. I just think the inconsistency throughout the season, and then you lose someone like that, that's a huge loss. And then on the flip side of Portland, it seems to me that they're turning a corner now. They look like a better team defensively, offensively. Probably not going to be happy with a 2-2 against Austin, but... last 3 games, undefeated, looking pretty good. Evander, it looks like he's trying.
He looks better.
Yeah, he looks way better. He's getting in better pockets of space. He looks more confident on the ball, which is a huge, huge sign. Mascara has been great for me with Portland. So I think all the pieces, especially the injuries in Portland, those players coming back in. So it's, for me, 2 different sides at this moment.
Blue 2 leads, which has to be frustrating at home.
Yeah, but it feels like Evander's actually picking up the ball in deeper areas, mm-hmm. and that's probably where he's better. And you look at the assist to Zuparic, it's like he didn't touch the ball that deep on the field at all the first few weeks. Then when you see him in the final third, it's like, he's not really going to beat someone from a standing position. So he's not really that dangerous without space. Mm-hmm. But the more space he gets, the more chance for him to use his vision and use his quality. So, yeah, I think Portland, it is amazing, by the way. Portland spends more on attacking fullbacks than Vancouver spends on strikers. Just blows my mind.
Shout out to the Dancing Bear as well. There's an
shout
MLS,
out to anyone
MLS
still
man,
listening.
Will Bruin,
I was gonna say, is anyone listening to us?
and to quote Anders, for the love of God, please wrap. And we will.
Six,
we'll
baby.
Be back on Thursday with an interview with Michael Vang of T2, talking about the Hmong people bullish. And being capped for the Laotian national team. Really cool interview as we embark on Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. That's it for us. Any thoughts? You know where to get at us, at Extra Time on Twitter. Adios. Enjoy your week.
Ciao. We'll be right back.